anyone have a question or anything to share?
Statement of the unwrinkling of the no. And, you know, obviously I realize I forget exactly what the context was, and not that it really necessarily matters as much as how I understand it or interpret it. But it was just kind of interesting, like for me, I was thinking about how there's been times in my life when something's come up and I've been really resistant and automatically just say no.
Right.
Without, you know, much spaciousness or curiosity. And so I was just kind of sitting with that. And then today I was clipping the shrubs and I attempted to clip pretty down low and I couldn't. Unless I really gave it a lot of force. And so instead, I kind of backed off and started more at the top and worked my way down. And so it was just kind of interesting just again kind of to sit with the question, you know, to see what, you know, kind of came from it. And so, yeah, I was just curious if that's kind of what, again, I forget what the context was. I know it was several days ago.
So I actually remember the context, which is a miracle, if I got it right. And it was someone had asked in a note about feeling hot, cold, nausea, etc., while walking. And I had mentioned that that could happen while standing. It can happen actually, basically while coming close to that frozen no or locked no that's old. And so it was in the context of saying maybe that we can say that the body doesn't lie, but sometimes we misinterpret what the body's saying and we hear an old no as a now no. We hear we experience symptoms of that are a no. They're saying no, but it's not actually saying no to the present situation. And going, backing off and coming back up to the surface and then going back deep is a great metaphor for what can help there be the trust and friendliness and also sense of contact with the, like being more in touch with that bush, more in touch with yourself as in your experience of the bush. So similarly, we get more in touch by feeling what's that superficial layer of the programmed or built-in accumulated no, alarm, stress, trauma, whatever kind of level of no it might be. And then it's like, let's actually be friends before we use force. And then we'll see if force is needed or not. Beautiful. And we can also feel for the locked yes. And where it sounds out in situations that it doesn't mean to, kind of. And hides where it's really called for. And so unlocking the yes and the no. So that there's a real unpredictability. That every moment is really fresh. And however scary or exciting that may sound, that's real. And something in us rhymes with that, and yeah. And so maybe when I'm saying that 80-20, I think of, hi Kim, welcome. Were you here yesterday? No, okay. So I encourage people to practice like working on something difficult like 10 to 20% of the time rather than all the time. Because we have such a fascination for and a a compulsion to try to feel that we're earning our right to be here by being busy with something important that we can feel we're doing. And so to be in touch with subtle things that we can't really feel if we're in touch with anything almost. Or we certainly don't have instant feedback that I'm doing something productive. And we've also gone off the scientist's ability to measure. We've gone off the charts. So up to a certain point, science can measure and it tells us how good mindfulness is for our physical and mental health. But when we let mindfulness take us towards meditation, we lose track of any symptom of, is this really productive? Is this worth my time? And so then a lot of the most important things a human being could be involved in, because they're off the charts, we get busy with something else. So if we think of unlocking the yes as a something that quietly could happen, I hope by saying numbers it doesn't sound hard and fast or something like that, but imagine how it would be in our lives, that the vast majority of the time is gently unlocking the yes, the deep yes. Just imagine or feel. And that means that if that 10 or 20% is enough time, it's actually enough to help unlock where we got stuck with a no, with a terror, with a panic, with an anger, with a rage, with a insecurity. That all that huge programming that when we come on retreat, we acknowledge mostly runs everything in our lives. It's so pervasive. And what if 10 or 20% of our time is enough to release? And what if spending much more time than that tends to accentuate the programming? How does it feel to hear that? Does it feel true? Is it like possible? Is there any doubt or question that anyone wants to bring up?
Not so much of doubt, but just that I felt shocked over the past even just few hours of how deep the busyness goes.
Yeah.
And that there feels almost like a waiting room between dropping the busyness and I don't know what.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Landing in this I don't know space.
Mm-hmm. Great. Could you hear that?
No.
Would you like to say it again, or I can broadcast for you?
I can broadcast.
Okay. I'll try, and then you can tell me if I heard you right. So she's noticed, including especially in the last few hours, how deep the busyness goes in her experience, and that there seems to be kind of a waiting space or time. Space, I think you said? Room?
Waiting room.
Between kind of being less interested in the busyness and really landing in the not knowing. Is that what you said? And that's really good. So when we talked about ordinariness the other day, one version of what's boring or feels too ordinary for our taste is that waiting room. And there are a lot of good metaphors, similes from our physical experience, like going into a dark room. At first, we don't see anything. And after a while, we can sometimes see everything. It's an adjustment time of where our more subtle knowing or experiencing feeling has a chance to be called on, has a chance to come in. And when we're moving to more subtle, deep layers, we could give it a little more time than we give our eyes to adjust. So a lot of times it can feel like nothing's happening on. And even if we've noticed like the weather today, there's something similar to the waiting room, a little bit, to that time before a storm, before you can feel, oh, it's going to rain. So then we actually can feel it's going to rain before we can feel it's going to rain. We can feel we're going deeper before we feel we're going deeper. Does that make sense? As a metaphor.
The low pressure system is here, even though the clouds aren't in here, or something like that.
Yeah, some kind of, I think there may be, in weather terms, a lot of different specifics. Because I think there's a lot of different kinds of before a storm feeling. Sometimes it's more, and sometimes it's just, there's been a shift, but it hasn't shifted all the way. There's just a feeling that we've partly shifted, but not all the way, which is what I was sensing today. Before then, it was like, oh, wow, all right, we get that storm. And it's a kind of waking up of our sensing capacity that we've talked about this week as like getting a whiff. We've talked about it as forgetting trying to see and really letting ourselves bumble along and stumble along and feel our way. Because then we're actually in touch with what's happening. And we've given up, so sometimes it can feel like hopelessness. Because we've given up what we thought we should be able to do. We should be able to see the storm coming. Or the breakthrough coming, or whatever. And so what I wanted to bring up today was a question that I gave you a few days ago, also, around shifts that happen. And what helps, what allows a shift to happen, what encourages a shift to happen. So it's partly, first of all, what does it feel like when a shift happens? And it can be so simple as the shift of remembering that your body could be allowed to decide its own posture, so to speak. And so that means noticing that I've been pressuring the body to copy what I think it's supposed to do. So first of all, it dawns on me that I have not let my body have its own intelligence in the posture. I've put some deadening energy into my posture without realizing. And then, oh, that doesn't have to be, and then, okay, then the body could. So it's a lot of shiftiness. Shift of noticing that it's not actually, let's say, there's not integrity in the posture. We're not allowing wholeness in the posture by programming, by habit. So it's not, there's not a fight. It's just normal that that happens. That's already a shift. And then the shift of, oh, let's see what happens if I give a little room to the body. That's another shift. So anyone feel like describing any quality of shift? The experience of shift. It could be shift of perspective, it could be shift of alignment, whether physical or in the psyche or spiritual. And or, just to leave it open for anyone who's willing to dare to speak.
I feel like there's a lightening up. Mm-hmm. Something is, I mean, there's a release of energy. Mm-hmm. You know, that's maybe been held, and then there's, it just feels lighter.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
I had a, I don't know if this is exactly on track, but more an awareness in the previous meditation of a, like my body holding tension in a way that I didn't feel like I had to fix it, but that I could just be present to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was choosing in that moment.
Cool.
Was to be in that space.
And how did that mind or consciousness feel to just let it be?
I felt like I was kind of letting it do what it was choosing to do in that moment, so it was nice to be free of that judgment of,
mm-hmm.
oh, there's tension there, I have to relax that and release mm-hmm. that because that's not, you know.
Not allowed.
Copacetic.
Not, what did you say?
Copacetic.
Copacetic.
I don't know, that cool.
Oh. Awesome. I don't think I've ever heard that word before. That's great. Copacetic?
Yeah, I don't. may have said it in the 50s, and I may be wrong about that.
Cool.
It's just a story.
Okay. So a quality of free in the consciousness that allows
even
that.
Even sensing of like, like this is different. There's this tension here, and that's just, it felt comfortable to be free of that need to fix it, or that there was the alarm didn't go off.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it did, it was like more subtle, and kind of I was able to be more present to just, this is what it's happening.
It didn't take over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. It sounds, I also feel like confidence in what you're saying, or trust, but if I would use the word confidence, that it can be here.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to dominate. Okay, cool. Copacetic.
Sometimes it feels like maybe you mentioned earlier, like an animal in a cage, and then just like I can't get out, so I'll just, and that feels like the shift, just like being in the box.
Yeah.
And then sometimes when it's sweet, it feels like taking off the heaviest coat, and then not realizing how heavy it was until I took it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, so we can say that's a great description of, it also sounds like lightness and a bit more freedom of movement too. Could you describe the quality of that kind of, I'm in the cage, but so what, or it's okay, or some kind, you I think you went like this with your hands a little bit.
Like ride to the edge of the despair a little bit for a while, so it hits like a peak, we talked about earlier. And then it like all I could do is this, just like something just like the bottom falls out or something, and then just like passing.
What's that bottom?
I don't know.
Can you just feel in case something comes up to help us understand? Because Shoshana also mentioned the release, I think, that word.
It feels connected to something, feels connected somehow to all the striving that I add to the presence.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the striving just wears itself out,
mm-hmm.
Just, I can't really find like a word for the quality of the bottom other than that.
So what's the source of striving in your experience?
I'm not sure.
Let's try to feel. Does anything come up?
I mean, the word that came up was like homesickness.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the constant feeling of being far from your home, and how insane that can feel. And there can be like a desperation that then you form plans.
Like, that then what's right?
Then you start forming
plans
to get back home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what the striving feels like.
So a few days ago, I mentioned that the Buddhist word is thirst. And so it's a similar kind of sense of homesickness that's trying to get home, but by trying to get home is not getting home. And yet maybe from the same place of acknowledging homesickness, so like rewinding and unwinding out of that insanity feeling, acknowledging pressure, and then so, and Megan's example is great for that, so that there can be something that normally would trigger my alarm system, which is pressure, can be pressure, and that can be here. Okay, and the homesickness itself, like what's really home? Not from a place of homesickness, like what's, like as if with the confidence that I could really know what home is in this life, or even in this moment. or that actually I already do know what home is. That's what I really think. And what kind of knowing is it that already knows what home is? It's such a different kind. So what's home? What's already home feel like? Or already knowing what I'm sick for, homesick for? What am I homesick for? In case if anything comes, it's not meant to pressure you.
That feels close.
Mm-hmm. And what does close feel like? If we can all together like feel, okay, close, rather than unsettled, off balance, uprooted, like, okay, close. Does anybody get a hit of that? Okay, what is close? What's the texture of close?
It's kind of coming to mind is that actually that sense of deep peace after we chant and then we just kind of hang out in that circle space. That's that, like, I feel a deep stillness and a deep, like, peace.
Mm-hmm.
That feels close.
And could you describe the texture in your body and your cells and your tissues of peace?
The texture is smooth, and it's kind of a temperatureless. I mean, I want to say tending a little bit towards cool, but and the kind of grounded weightlessness.
Anybody else feeling any response? I just want to check with Jess first, you know? Then we can, if you want to be off the spotlight, we can.
It's helpful. I feel a little bit at the edge of no words.
Yeah, which is in itself a kind of description. Could you hear her so quietly saying really something beautiful?
Not
at the
best.
Edge of her words.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Edge of words, edge of her words. Okay, I saw a couple of...
Just warm. Home feels warm and comforting and embracing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, I pictured immediately holding a baby on my chest.
Mm. Melting. Melting and tenderness. So we can kind of get a sense of how, with the shiftiness of our experience, we learn how to work with shiftiness. And then close and smooth and cool and warm and tenderness and what was the other word for baby on the chest?
Melting.
Melting, yeah. Thank you. Are so close. There's a quotation that has been with me for a few years, but especially the last few weeks. And the first time I kind of really came across it was a really funny place, which was the Atlanta airport. So when I tell people I grew up in Atlanta, people ask where I'm from, and my son and I look at each other and say, "That's a good question." But I did grow up in Atlanta. And when I say I'm from Atlanta, people say, oh, I've been there, I've been to the airport. And so I love that at the Atlanta airport, there is, I think it's still there, but there was anyway, this whole exhibit about Martin Luther King Jr. And there was this quotation, which is that anybody can be great because everybody can serve. Have you heard this line? It's a good line. Anybody can be great because everybody can serve. And then he said, you don't need a college degree to serve. You don't need, it's gonna make me tear up a little bit. Something that never went away since I had my first child, and I kind of like it, that I tear up when I'm moved. And it's funny, a funny line to tear up on. You don't need to make your subject and verb agree.
Are you sure about that one?
To serve. And then there's this line that I can't find that I'll try to find for us. And then he said, all you need is something that I can't find, and all you need is a heart full of grace. That's all. All you need is a heart full of grace. And it feels like the whatever that is, whatever he meant by that, heart full of grace, it feels like we just can walk into the way we just did by wondering, what am I homesick for? What is home? What if already there's some way that I know that, that I'm in touch with that already, that I can feel it? And I love that it starts to rain right now. And coming into home in that way, just kind of, and it does tend to be a kind of walking, crawling, sliding backwards, our theme of retreat, rather than getting off that advance train, getting off that advance addiction. And but it's literally often a sense of, let's get this part occupied enough with something quiet enough, like the breath, so that we can really start to wake up, have an awakening of what our real knowing and feeling is, which is kind of peripheral. As if with our back we can feel, we're in home, or with our down we can feel, we're at home. And there's all this other stuff going on, and that doesn't take anything away. And what home would do first is take care of all those parts that hurt because they don't feel home. So it's not an abstract that's disconnected from response to what hurts, or response to what's needed, which doesn't have to hurt. As we start to learn to respond to what's needed before it hurts, it doesn't have to hurt so much. So heart full of grace can be that innocence that can catch that glimpse of already can feel home, and therefore can play with all these things that don't match home. Is there anything someone wants to?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that you said heart full of grace. The thing that I was going to share was that the shift that I experienced, I think it was yesterday. We were playing in the movement in the mornings with a really experiencing three dimensionality through the heart and through the sacrum and various different things. And so as I was resting into my back, I I'd had this shift where I thought it was pretty relaxed, and then I just felt everything really mm-hmm. drop in. And I started to feel my heart in a way that I don't think I've ever felt it. It really felt very three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt all this activity moving around it, and I thought for a minute that maybe it was pounding out of my chest or something, so I put my hand here, and I really wasn't feeling that. You know, like when you're scared or something,
right.
you can feel your heart really pounding out of your chest. It was not that at all. It was all on the inner landscape. It was that, it was this really unique experience, and with all the body mind centering work that I've done,
mm-hmm.
sitting around trying to feel my kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
I was laughing at that. And you know,
you.
And all the embodied yoga, I was too, yes. But it is, it you know, it's, I've never experienced it in that way.
Mm.
And then when you, and I knew it wasn't rapturous or anything, but
mm-hmm.
it was more than physiological.
Mm.
And when you said heart full of grace, it
mm-hmm.
just went right there.
Mm.
So thank you for sharing that
mm.
quote.
Yeah. And I'm interested in the shift into our greatness. I think it's time. And I'm curious what helps us allow that greatness to be present. And I've also been kind of waiting for several days for, I mean, I didn't think it would necessarily storm, but I was waiting till we could get into that poem from a few days ago called The Storm. I think, is it still on the board, Ellen? Well, just as for anyone who's visiting who didn't get to read it, I certainly don't remember the whole thing. Okay. Please do. Do you want
to
read it for us?
Oh, okay. We lay on our bed as if in a tomb, awakened by thunder to the dark, in which our house was one with the night. And then the light came as if the black roof of the world had cracked open, as if the night of all time had broken, and our window we glimpsed the world, earth wet and shining, as even the sun at noon had never made it shine.
Thank you. So one thing I love in the poem is how necessary and together and vast the dark and light work on us. And I do think that's one of the keys towards finding a way that shiftiness can work in to our depth. And so where deep friendship, both within ourselves and with others, is equally necessary as loneliness, or solitude at least. But I actually think that there's some edge of loneliness going on in our path. It might have something to do with yesterday I talked about living in the presence of a pull that goes deeper than we know how to go, but still not blanking that out. Not like, oh, well, I can't deal with that, or that doesn't exist, but like, I don't know where that leads, and I know it's somehow true, we can say. I don't like that word too much, but it's got something, and that's all I know right now. So there's a woman who lives a few hundred years ago in India named Mirabai, in case you've heard of her, and she was in a royal family and royal situation and acting crazy. And she was in love with God. Like, she would sing all the time, and she saw him. For her, it was a hymn. But it was actually a really specific, sensual hymn. And so she would play chess with him in her room, and her husband would get jealous hearing her giggle with someone. And the mother-in-law would get worried that the neighbors would realize that the daughter-in-law was crazy because she's playing chess with someone who no one else can see. And she would pray that, she would pray like, God, please come into my eyes, because she would see and long for that, for his form. Like, she would really get into the details of, so almost like a teenager or something. His, the bells on his belt and the peacock feather and his hair. And so at the same time that our common sense is one of our best friends, also our craziness is one of the only ways kind of through the doorway into ourselves. She, Mirabai calls it the midnight tears. She said, we can try all those, all that paraphernalia and all those techniques, but if it were really just about, purely about a technique, it would be just really easy. We could just kind of get that tool and get good at using that tool, and that would be it. And that isn't what happens. She says it's the heat of midnight tears that bring us to God. And so finding where at home it makes sense that we can have our common sense available in ways that it never was. Because common sense can really see through a reaction and see it for what it is and not buy into it. It can see the pull towards a dynamic, a power dynamic and energy dynamic, and be uninterested. And so sometimes common sense looks like madness, because everybody else is really into button pushing, for example, and power. That's like mostly what people are talking about. And so to be uninterested in what everybody else is interested in is a certain kind of willingness to be mad. There's also a way that her midnight tears talk about patience and wholeheartedness, like wholehearted, not holding backness. And there's one place in us that knows those things that sound like two things, that sound like opposing directions. And so in some of the description of what feels like home, we could hear how, like, weightless gravity?
Grounded
weightlessness, thank you. Or release, where there's a lot of energy released, but it feels light. It's a lightness. And when it's more like really a storm, like we're really in touch with that, it's a great power that we're in touch with. It feels electrifying. We can kind of feel for that sort of center or common ground where great power also contains sort of simplicity and no movement. a kind of steadiness that just, it's not a big deal. Even when half of us or most of us is really freaked out about the storm. So this morning I mentioned that the theme of the day of looseness and power together and getting accustomed to there being great power available and sometimes nudging you right through the wall of fear or through the wall of habit, through the wall of a certain identity, how you saw yourself being. You're shy. You don't speak in a room of people. And then it nudges you. Or you're afraid of the dark, and something is walking to the hall at midnight. Knowing that we can never have 100% guarantee, but almost for sure you're not endangering yourself. Walking through the wall of fear. Walking through the wall of feeling humiliated that at such and such age you're still afraid of the dark. And not just ignoring that whole tangle, but actually just step by step. I'd like to read a poem, another one by Jane Hirschfield, called The Door. And I think I would like to read the last little stanza first, and then I'll read the whole thing again. She says, the rest note, unwritten, hinged between worlds, that precedes change and allows it. The rest note, unwritten, hinged between worlds, that precedes change and allows it. So we're talking about a shift into greatness. We're talking about any shift. What does that feel like to allow a shift that has intelligence in it? A shift that's wholesome. A shift into a wholesome momentum. So what allows a shift? And what allows a shift to sort of be under the sway of our deepest intelligence, under the sway of love, under the sway of loving life, with a capital L. And she calls it the rest note. And so it reminds me also of what I think Megan mentioned, that unwritten meditation that's my favorite of the day after the singing. It's not on the schedule. And that's part of why it's so sweet. And I think it happens even sometimes for people who are not in the singing, but like hearing it over there, doing their getting ready for bed or walking or whatever it is. So The Door by Jane Hirschfield. Is there anyone who has a question or something to share before I go into the poem? So I'm just feeling again that phrase, heart full of grace. I think it's sort of echoes the poem yesterday where what's good, what's a gift, is a space rather than a thing. A space where I have that real sense of not needing anything, a sense of no demand, of no lack. So envy is not operating. And negativity, that sort of machine, is not on. So even if there would be a discomfort, and this is really important, it doesn't trigger the whole pain body, in Eckhart Tolle's phrase. It doesn't trigger the whole problem, what's wrong, how to fix it, program or machine. We can practice towards where there can be inconvenience and discomfort, and it doesn't get us off of our momentum, doesn't stop our love of life, doesn't make us feel kicked out. The Door. A note, waterfalls steadily through us, just below hearing. So I have the feeling this poem might be hard to hear, and so should I repeat that already? Or is it okay? It's okay?
I'll repeat it.
Okay, repeat it. A note, waterfalls steadily through us, just below hearing. Or this early light streaming through dusty glass. What enters, enters like that. Unstoppable gift. And yet there is also the other, the breath space held between any call and its answer. In the querying first scuff of footstep, the wood owls repeating, the two counting heart, a little Sabbath, minnow whose brightness silvers past time, the rest note unwritten, hinged between worlds, that precedes change and allows it. A note waterfalls steadily through us, just below hearing. Or this early light streaming through dusty glass. What enters, enters like that. Unstoppable gift. And yet there is also the other, the breath space held between any call and its answer. In the querying first scuff of footstep, the wood owls repeating, woo-hoo, this two-counting heart, a little Sabbath, minnow whose brightness silvers past time, the rest note unwritten, hinged between worlds, that precedes change and allows it. If we can feel the liberation of the hinge, that in any situation, in any moment, whatever is going on, however far gone into a program, into a reaction, into a habit, there's a hinge that we can find aliveness, we can find space that just allows this to be, we can find the potency of the habit, of the reaction, that's beyond my control. It happened uninvited. I say, oh, I got angry, but angry got me. And it's, so it's a different situation. It's a workable situation. Angry got me, so then that's different. It's not sort of so much my fault, and yet it is within me. I'm involved in it. I can feel it. And I can feel the shiftiness of the actual experience. From a place that, with confidence of experience, so confidence of practice, we can fall into the timelessness of in any door, through any door. We can feel the call of any moment, any situation. What's the call? What's the response? By kind of resting in that, what does she call it? The breath space between any call and its answer. So when we don't feel that, sometimes it's more of a bubbling up than a water falling down. Music. Sometimes it's just a breath space between, there's a call, and we haven't yet, there hasn't been a response. So it's not that necessarily just light coming in or music happening down or bubbling up. But there is always, there's a call. And we can genuinely feel it. And and that querying first scuff of footsteps, so the bumbling and stumbling. Is great. You don't need to make the subject and verb agree. Just let the heart stumble into grace, into what we couldn't have come up with as a response. And allowing the response to happen is what allows that too much energy to not be too much. And only through practice we start to find that it becomes more and more precise. Our response has good timing. And good sense, good timing, and good power. It doesn't need to answer the call in a direct way. So often, as I mentioned yesterday, the indirect teachings are what kind of make it in, like the minnow. The minnow whose brightness silvers past time. And so when we feel it's too much, it is. It's true. It's too much for a separate individual to handle. There's truth in that feeling. But it could rather grow our confidence. That's a knowing that it's too much to be held in. It wants to be a response. It wants to be an unstoppable gift. Not only a needy, shaky, poor little seeker, but also a giver. So we can notice where in one of the Zen teachings called the Sinsen Ming, verse is on the faith mind. On faith mind is the very clunky translation that's often given. We can hear it more like that note that's in the poem, that waterfalls steadily through us, just below hearing, the trickle of trust. So a song about the trickle of trust being enough. And in the poem, or in the song, the words that the song gives us across time from centuries ago is that even the slightest discriminating thought sets heaven and earth infinitely apart. Sets black and white infinitely apart. Sets patience and lightning strike infinitely apart. Sets kindness and fierceness infinitely apart. Sets things that don't go apart. They don't go well when they're apart. And it goes extremely well as one, together, living, breathing, emerging path. Powerful and loose. Anybody can be great because everybody can serve. What is that movement to serve? To serve out some of that greatness, like good food. We don't need a college degree, and we don't need to make subject and verb agree, just a heart full of grace. May all beings be free. In the infinity of heaven and earth, where we cannot find the dividing line. It isn't there, except in our mind. May our practice and the fullness of our lives commit themselves to the momentum towards liberation for all, including ourselves.